This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our radio Main Street across North Dakota this time of day. As we broadcast, we stream at prairiepublic.org. And after the show, you can always find the program there, prairiepublic.org, in our radio archives. And today, our COVID-19 Main Street Interactive Town Hall looks at arts and culture in North Dakota. And we're going to feature two people who are leaders in those areas in our state. Kim Conoco is the Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Thank you for joining us today, Kim.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Brenna Gerhart, Executive Director of Humanities North Dakota, also with us today. Thank you, Brenna.
Absolutely. Thanks, Doug.
Let's start, Kim, with your circumstances at the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Give us a snapshot of the effect of the pandemic on your organization's activities.
Well, we started almost immediately by reaching out and asking people to give us some feedback regarding the survey on what the losses had been. And we have had a great number of people reply to the survey, which is a good thing. We really do want to know what's going on out there. So we've had performances canceled, benefits canceled, summer programs canceled, most notably the International Peace Gardens, the International Music Camp has canceled their summer, which is a big blow. And there have been, of course, gallery closings and exhibition closings, museums closings. A lot of people have taken to doing online, which is really wonderful in terms of being able to provide outreach to just everyone in an accessible way to see collections online, to view poetry and performances online. Theater B has been doing readings of plays. And then there are a lot of people who simply have said, there's nothing we can do right now, and we're going to postpone for a little bit and see how things end up in terms of time.
This is an interactive town hall. You can interact with our guests today by giving us a call toll-free, 888-755-6377, and you can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. That number again, 888-755-6377. Now, Kim mentioned Carrie Winterstein, the executive director of Theater B, and something new they invented for the stay-at-home audience. Let's listen to her.
Hi, this is Carrie Winterstein with Theater B here in Fargo-Moorhead. The pandemic has actually inspired all of us at Theater B to make theater online in a new way, Zoom and Facebook Live, to do video readings of short plays and comic books and other things we're calling Be at Home. And that's actually allowed us to involve artists that we haven't had on our stage in a long time, so that's delightful. It's also introduced us to some new material and some new audiences. And it's giving us something fun and creative to focus on. So instead of feeling distracted, we can focus on making art. Thanks.
That was Carrie Winterstein, the executive director of Theater B, and this Be at Home effort. I know that I've seen a few of these presentations, and they're fun. It's not the same
they're
as
great.
Being in the theater, but it's something to see, and it's very inventive and creative. Brenna, bring us up to date on what's happened to Humanities North Dakota. What's your snapshot of the effect on your organization?
Yeah, we've made the pivot pretty quickly just to moving all of our programs online and helping our program partners do that. So we're unrolling some writing workshops. Deb Marquardt, who many of you know, who wrote Horizontal World, Growing Up Wild in the Middle of Nowhere, is going to do some basic writing classes and some master writing classes because people are solitary. Writing's a solitary activity, so we think this is actually a great opportunity to connect North Dakotans who are writing across the state. We've been doing think and drink happy hour discussions. It's BYOB now.
yes.
So in your living room instead of at Laughing Sun or a bar. We just did one on fake news and how it's been affecting what's going on with the COVID response. We have one coming up with David Gerkley, an editor at Time Magazine. He's kind of going to look at mental health and the way the language we have around that affects how people are treated. We're going to do some Chautauqua living history. So we'll do an evening with Mark Twain. We'll do an evening with Frederick Douglass. We're just going to showcase some of our best living history presenters across the United States and bring them right here virtually through time and space. We're also focusing on adult civics education classes. So we're going to invite people to learn more about our founding documents, learn more about problems that are facing democracy. So we'll probably debate whether or not we should keep the Electoral College. We're just really hoping that people will take this time to deepen their understanding of American democracy. Of course, we'll do book discussions in partnership with libraries across the state, do that virtually. And we have a new issue of On Second Thought coming out. We planned a special edition. It's called In Good Humor. We're trying to get people to shift away from thinking about the pandemic and maybe do a little bit more of a lighthearted issue featuring writers from North Dakota.
All right. And you're also, like the Council on the Arts, conducting an online survey to assess the
Correct.
Impact, right? Tell our listeners how that's working.
Yeah. So if you're from a cultural organization, a library, museum, Native American cultural nonprofit, you can go to humanitiesnd.org and fill out that survey. We do have some stimulus funds available that we will be distributing. The survey, the application form will come out May 1, but the survey is up there now, so we can kind of tailor our response. And we're looking to support organizations that have had to close and are losing admission fees and support the staff there.
Kim, the federal relief legislation, the CARES Act, is designed to help some organizations that you work with, I think, that employ people and, you know, have taken a real beating because people aren't coming to performances necessarily. Can you outline these kinds of relief that might be available from the federal government to artists?
Well, from the federal government directly, the CARES Act, there's an appropriation of $75 million, and that got split up through a variety of national organizations. The National Endowment for the Arts, in terms of their funding out, they are working with people who have received endowment funding in the last 4 years directly applying to the endowment. And for us, that is only representative of four organizations. And then there is an agreement with the state arts agencies across the country and a few of the territories. And I wish I could say for certain how the money was split up, but each of those 50 state arts organizations and territories just last week, Thursday, received word that we were getting funding, which was directly related to COVID response. So we are receiving a grant, a really nice one, of $421,700, which is quite a bit of money for the Arts Council. And first, we'll have to make sure we have legislative permission through the Emergency Commission, this being the state government, to accept and then have spending authority to use those funds. And while that is happening, we're designing how we are going to get those funds out. The funds will be available as of July 1, and we are going to make sure that in terms of the institutional support category, community arts access, both tiers 1 and 2, and then a few other things that we'll be able to get money out the door. One of the issues is funding individuals, which
yes.
we are not allowed to do, nor is the endowment, but we can actually provide a re-grant to a fiscal sponsor, which is we're in the process of setting up now so that we will be able to let them take applications from individual artists across the state.
Kim Conoco is Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts. We're also talking with Brenna Gerhart, the Executive Director of Humanities North Dakota. Both these organizations do get significant funding from the national umbrella organization, the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities. If you have a question or, for that matter, a personal story you'd like to share with our listeners about the challenges and perhaps opportunities that this pandemic emergency has created for you personally, give us a call, 888 888- 855-635-7577, or you can email us, mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. Brenna, what about the sort of relief, if you will, for your agency and the people you support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we received the same amount of funding, and we're looking to get that out the door. We're working with the state library to get that to local community libraries and to get it to historic sites and historic museums as soon as possible. On May 1, we'll post the grant guidelines for that, and we're hoping to just do a quick two-week turnaround to get that in people's hands so that they can not necessarily keep their doors open, but keep their staff working and hopefully offer more online programming and prepare for when they're able to open again. We just really want to keep our cultural infrastructure strong and functioning and able to respond to this as best we can.
A lot of this is moving online just by virtue of that's the place that is safe in terms of physical distancing. We have another voicemail we can share with you and our listeners. This is Nicole Gagner and talking about her teaching art.
Hi, I'm Nicole Gagner from Bismarck, North Dakota, and I have been taking my art lessons online. Just wanted to share that teaching art from afar was not anything that I ever imagined. It's a very in-person thing normally, but it's actually been a lot of fun still being able to connect with people and help them be creative while we're all stuck in our own homes. Bye.
And I know that lots of arts organizations are doing that. We mentioned Carrie Winterstein. I talked a couple of weeks ago with a professor I know in New York City who teaches acting now online. That's possible. It's a little harder to do a show, though. Let's talk, Kim, about recommendations for how organizations should communicate with people who support the arts and humanities by purchasing season tickets to events. What's your advice?
Well, it's an interesting time. I think that when we started to move away from being in large groups and staying at home, a lot of places, for example, choirs and symphony orchestras and theaters really had to think hard about how they were going to deal with season ticket holders. I know, for example, the Fargo Theater had to cancel their film festival.
Yes.
But I do think that what the message that we put out and we suggested that they did also was to talk openly with their patrons, recommend that they leave their money in the organization and not ask for a refund in terms that it could be turned into a donation, that there might be additional future programs that people could be involved in, and that this was the best way to support rather than to ask for a refund.
And, of course, there are memberships sometimes. You can belong to a theater organization or a symphony or a civic opera. And sponsorships, those businesses in the community which may themselves have been impacted by the pandemic and have provided that sort of level of support. Is this a time when it's going to be harder to ask for memberships and sponsorships?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I'm sure Brenna would agree that this is true. I mean, this is true across the board because I think people's first response right now is COVID-19 and the health and well-being of our citizens. And I think that at times like this, asking for money for sponsorships is very difficult, and that what we do see, though, is a huge leap in people turning to arts and creativity and humanities and cultural activities because it is healing, it is soothing, it is engaging, it is a stress reliever, it is a way to share, it is a way to occupy, all of those things. So in some ways, where I think we have to take advantage of that is how to tell those stories as the restrictions ease up a little bit, and to make sure that people, sponsors, businesses, the legislature understand the impact that arts, culture, humanities have had during this stressful time.
Yes, I can imagine that most of us, as we physically distance, are taking advantage of that screen in our homes or the radio, I hope, to, you know, entertain and, keep our minds busy and our creative juices flowing. I think streaming movies online has probably never been higher, but it's a reminder that this creative energy that we love to indulge ourselves in comes at a cost. And, you know, it's not just the movies. I'm thinking now of university arts programs like music and theater programs that have been canceled. Straw Hat Players have canceled their summer season at Morehead State. That's, I think, the first time in my memory that's happened. I spent 4 years there 50 years ago. So it's been an important part of the community's summer entertainment option for a long, long time. And now that won't happen this summer. This has severely disrupted that performance education opportunity that universities provide. There are students there who are learning to be artists.
Well, hopefully they are learning to be artists and involved in humanities and writers and historians continuing now. Let's hope they are and that we don't lose them.
Well, until there's a vaccine or an effective treatment, and that could be some time, public gatherings will either be discouraged or they'll simply suffer from the residual apprehension people are going to have about rubbing shoulders. I mean, it will be self-imposed physical distancing for at least some time. So what is the state of long-term planning? First of all, for the humanities operation in North Dakota, you begin, mm-hmm. Brenna.
Yeah, well, we've already made the decision to cancel our biggest event, which is the Game Changer Ideas Festival, where we tried to bring in some of the most innovative thinkers in the world to North Dakota to share their thoughts and just stimulate discussion around critical issues facing our democracy. And we just realized that that probably isn't going to happen because there's so much planning that goes into it, and it's very unsure. The Fust Fest also made the decision to cancel this year. The Writers' Conference is not happening, and they've moved online. You can look through their archives, which I encourage people to do, but I think things are just really in flux and people are unsure, so it's hard to plan when you know that your event could very well have suffered from really low attendance or no attendance. But I think it's also a great time to remind people to make a bucket list. So when there is a vaccine and we can come out of this, that we come out stronger and we really support those cultural organizations. As Kim said, and I just absolutely agree, people turn to the arts and humanities for solace in these times, for distraction, for deeper reflection. And it just shows how critical they are just to our health and well-being. And that when we don't invest in them in the good times, where they're not going to be there for us when something like a pandemic or something unexpected happens. So I really hope that people will be looking across the board at opportunities they're missing, things they've always wanted to do, and they make it happen when this comes back in a really strong way so that we keep those organizations healthy and strong and this place is more dynamic and vibrant because of it.
Now, among our listeners, I know we have participants and we have appreciators of the arts and humanities, and we are interested in your personal stories about how you're dealing with this. In some cases, it might be you've lost significant income. So I encourage you to call us toll-free, 888-755-6377, or go online to mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. This is an opportunity to share your story or offer your advice to us. Kim, what's the state of long-term planning for the Arts Council?
Well, I think that something we always do is to plan. And as a grant maker, we have a couple of deadlines for future programs coming up with Community Arts Access, two arts and education grants, the Master Apprenticeship Grant, and a few other. And ideally, we're asking people to think ahead, to plan ahead. We don't know what the outcome of this pandemic will be across the country, the world, here in North Dakota. But we have to keep looking ahead. And one of the things that we're looking at with some of the CARES Act funding is utilizing that in the future toward programs that really look at community healing, arts in the community, collaborations around the state, so that we can keep this energy going and have people thinking about their programs in a very different way than just the audience in a theater and or a concert or art on the wall. I think that we have several organizations across the state that do a really good job with thinking big like that, and others where we're going to hopefully be able to offer some more strategic planning and technical assistance to help get them a stronger footing in their communities and responsiveness. We also have a convening in the fall. It was directly before Game Changer. At the moment, we're still looking at October 6th and 7th, and we're partnering with the Main Street Initiative. And we know and have been having ongoing conversations that this might end up online, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to bring people together because we feel at that point it's going to be one of those things that would be necessary for people to hug and gather.
You mentioned legislators a couple of times, and of course the North Dakota legislature doesn't meet this year. It's every 2 years, and we're in the middle of it right now. But these arts organizations are for many communities highlighted. They're important. They're something that the economic development organizations in a town like Fargo, for example, tout. So what about
– Or a town like Pekin.
Yes. Yes, the Pekin Arts. I went to it last year. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think arts are really a part of healthy, vibrant communities, which is a phrase that Governor Burgum and Main Street Initiative use often. But I feel like we are the base of those communities, that we're a part of economic development, that our impact is felt among children in schools, elders in senior homes, vets in nursing homes or facilities. We're everywhere. And I have to come back to the healing and solace that is found at rough times when people turn to arts and humanities and culture. And whether or not we can keep that at the forefront of the legislators' minds remains to be seen. I have heard rumblings that there will be some cuts to our budget. We've been talking about it already as a staff and trying to think about what possibly could go, and our response is always, well, nothing. It's essential.
It's not like you're huge to begin with.
No, we're not. We're not. We're very small but mighty.
Okay. So you'll be going to the state perhaps and asking, but you'll have to get in line because people will as well. We're talking about the arts and culture and the effects of the pandemic on these activities in North Dakota. This is a COVID-19 Main Street Interactive Town Hall. Again, you can call us 888-755-6377. Or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. We're talking with Kim Conoco, the Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and Brenna Gerhart, Executive Director of Humanities North Dakota. And we'll have more of our discussion after the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Job Service North Dakota has been working to process unemployment claims as that number nears the 50,000 mark. Brian Klipfel is director of both Job Service and Workforce Safety. He says at the peak demand, Job Service was processing 2,500 claims a day. He says that's slowed a bit to around 1,500 claims a day.
Before this pandemic started, we were getting like 80 claims a day.
Klipfel says added to that are the new federal programs for relief because of the pandemic, including the extra $600 under the Pandemic Unemployment Compensation Program.
We have to do some reprogramming of our main system to accommodate those, and that's what's been taking a little bit more time, and then you have to get guidance from the United States Department of Labor. that guidance has come. So we're trying to get these programs implemented as fast as we can, because we understand that the customers out there, some of them need it badly to help pay bills.
Klipfel says those $600 payments should be getting out this week. Klipfel also says the increased workload has strained existing job service staff.
Our business at Workforce Safety and Insurance has slowed down a little bit, so we've taken some of our staff and redirect them over to job service, especially some of the staff that maybe came from job service in the first place.
Voting in the June 9th primary will be done by mail because of the coronavirus pandemic. On a national level, President Trump has vocally opposed any voting by mail, saying it increases the risk of voter fraud. UND political science professor Dr. Bo Wood says the arguments he's heard against vote by mail seem far-fetched.
The thing that is not far-fetched is that people that vote conservatively, vote Republican, tend to be more reliable in going to the trouble of going to the polling place and turning out. There's just general widespread agreement that moving to a voter-by-mail system would not have an equal impact on both parties.
Wood says it's unlikely that elections are ever changed because of fraudulent voting. And the calm before the storm, that's how North Dakota Mineral Resources Director Lynn Helms described his monthly director's cut oil and gas production report. This report reflects the numbers from February.
In February, we began from a good place. We actually saw production increase a little over 20,000 barrels a day, about 1.4%, 1.45 million barrels a day, remarkably. Natural gas production increased substantially more, 6.4% increase.
Helms says the state also achieved 87% natural gas capture. But since that time, Helms says the number of drilling rigs has fallen from 54 in February to 34 currently. He says the number of inactive wells is also up.
What we're seeing is tremendous volume of applications for non-completed well waivers and inactive well waivers coming in the door. Next month, we're going to see massive increases in those numbers as the Industrial Commission has implemented its policy to allow industry to make business-based, financial-based decisions on cutting back production and shutting wells in.
Helms says the recent announcement of the agreement between Saudi Arabia and Russia to cut their oil production by 10 million barrels a day will help. But he says worldwide demand for oil is down and has not yet bottomed out. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
To help support our small business community, the SBA has created a small business resource page dedicated to COVID-19 at sba.gov/coronavirus, including CDC requirements for small businesses, how to access SBA loan products, information on loan deferments, and more. Additionally, SBA's North Dakota network of resource partners stand ready to assist small businesses across the state. These partners are seeing clients virtually to minimize exposure to COVID-19 and to protect our small business communities. More information can be found at sba.gov/coronavirus. This message was brought to you by Prairie Public and the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Support for the COVID-19 Town Hall Series on Main Street is provided by the Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Dakota Caring Foundation.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. We are holding our COVID-19 Main Street Interactive Town Hall. You can interact by giving us a call, 888-755-6377, or emailing mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. We've also been taking some voicemails, I should say, and we received one from the Arts Partnership in Fargo-Moorhead.
Hey, this is Ethan Michelson. I work with the Arts Partnership, and it has been especially tough. In the past month, we've had to delete almost 50 events off our calendar, and it's been just heartbreaking to see all of those pass by without any impact to the arts community. If you're out there and are struggling to stay positive through all the cancellations, we're still hearing. Here's a couple of things that are going on. There's a spring virtual makers market on April 18th and 19th. Where each artist is featured on their website as a directory into participants, and special discounts will be available throughout the weekend. Also, Unglued is having a lot of online virtual markets where you can actually do classes with artists. And finally, the Arts Partnership is doing a live stream every Friday with an arts organization or an individual artist where we get involved We actually participate with you. We'll answer your questions, and you can participate with us. You can either draw or take a dance lesson or see an art exhibit. So check us out every Friday at 4:44 p.m. We'll be streaming live on Facebook. You can search us, the Arts Partnership. Make sure you support your local artists and keep sharing things that you love. Bye.
Just a reminder that there's a lot moving online. Just about every sort of subject is there, and of course, arts and culture are included. We're talking with Kim Conoco, the Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and Brenna Gerhart, the Executive Director of Humanities North Dakota, about the pandemic's impact on their cultural and arts operations. I want to direct our listeners to your websites. Kim, yours is nd.gov/arts. And when people go up there, they are going to find a fair amount of information about ways to deal with this emergency.
Yes, indeedy. There is, first of all, just a resource page that the link is from the front page. And that covers everything from teaching artists to articles about the arts to activities for working with children from home to funding information, et cetera. And then there's also a new link that we just added that will take you to a page where we're starting to record some of the amazing and ingenious ways that people can be involved in the arts and to see the arts projects and programs that are online and you can take advantage of. We're continuing to grow that. We're in the process of starting to write about some of these very special programs, and we'll get them posted online.
I saw one link up there for an event that's coming up for musicians, Safe at Home Fest, April 18th. And there's a list of musicians there, some names you're really going to recognize. Jesse Veeder was one of them, I know. So I encourage people to check that out. Go to nd.gov/arts and look at their coronavirus resources page, pages, I should say. There's a lot of information there. And humanity.
And I would also just encourage people to look at Facebook, because that's one of the more frequent places that we place events.
All right. Thank you for that, because I check my Facebook page every day as well. Brenna, humanitiesnd.org is your website. What can people find there?
Yeah, well, we have a survey up now just for constituents asking what they need while they're at home. What kind of classes do they want to take? Book discussions, writing workshops. What can we do to fill kind of the void that they're experiencing socially and culturally and educationally while this is happening? And then there's a survey for cultural institutions asking how we can help them continue to serve their constituents as they move to online formats and they think long-term into the future. There's also a really great link on there to Read North Dakota, which features books from and about North Dakota. This would be a great time to explore North Dakota literature. I know Kim and I earlier today had a conversation with Claudia Berg at the State Historical Society where we were trying to do a brainstorm because even if this COVID continues, surveys show that people will go outside and are actually looking to gather more, not gather, to go into outdoor places, to use trails, state parks, those kind of things. So we're trying to think creatively about how can we bring the arts and humanities to historic sites and trails across North Dakota. And maybe it's coupling a book with a place. I know Louise Erdrich and the Turtle Mountains are really entwined, and she's got a new book out, which is something that I encourage everyone to check out. So we're trying to be kind of creative about how we rethink how we deliver the arts and humanities to the general public at a time like this.
Well, I know a lot of museums have developed virtual visits to show off what they have on their walls. And I noted with interest today that I came across the North Dakota Museum of Art is planning an Art in Isolation exhibition coming up in May. There's a lot in flux yet, but it's an idea that they're just asking people to be creative, to submit some images to the museum, 8.5 by 11, black and white. They'll use it on copy paper, and they're going to put them on a wall in one of the museum's galleries. And I suspect we'll be able to visit it without necessarily having to go there, but maybe that option will be there as well. But it occurs to me, Brenna, that the humanities doesn't always require an audience. The arts doesn't either. Mm-hmm. Is this an opportunity to kind of expand your vision of how to deliver these ideas, these products, if you will?
Absolutely. That is always a challenge. But I think the humanities, it's about deep reflection. And a lot of it is about turning inward and really thinking about your own ethics and character and what is most meaningful to you. It's really meaning-making. And that can happen in discussions in groups and communities, but a lot of times the humanities are a very solitary activity where you step away from society and step away from distractions. It's hard to close that screen. And we actually spent most of our time up till now encouraging people to close that screen and come together face-to-face or just really kind of meditate on the deeper questions of life. And I think now we're being forced to return to that. In some ways, even though we're trying to move our programs online, a big component of all that is that reflection and stepping away and stepping back. And I think if anything good comes of that, it's just to remind us that we need to make space in our lives to do that. We see a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of incivility out there. And I think a lot of that just comes from the fast pace of the culture that we've built and the lives that we've built. And so learning to take that time, being forced to take that time, perhaps is something that we need to do. And I hope that will continue even after this over, that people will realize just what a gift that is to have that time to reflect. If they do, I have kids at home. I'm trying to homeschool as I work. So even I don't always have that time, but 28% of older adults in the U.S. live alone.
Well,
and have that time.
There are lots of parents at home right now with kids, and they're dealing with that homeschool reality because all the public schools are closed and the instruction has moved online. So let's talk about the instructional resources that can be provided by organizations like Humanities North Dakota or the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Kim?
Well, Rebecca Engelman, who is our Director of Education, is working with a group of North Dakota teaching artists, so those artists that are also very well-versed in teaching and have teaching skills. And when Nicole called in, she actually was one of the first who submitted a teaching video. And so we're hosting a few of them on our website, and we hope that they are shared. And again, there are resources for teaching artists and many, many links to activities that can be done with kids at home in the arts as a base, whether it's music, dance, theater, reading, visual arts, etc. So there's a lot available, and I think that more than anything that I've seen, teaching and shared performances have been available online.
Brenna, you mentioned Louise Erdrich and the Turtle Mountain book is out. We've been hearing about reading clubs. I mean, they've been around for a long time, but now they're meeting virtually using Zoom or some other group video conferencing technique. How about taking it up a notch to having a facilitator, somebody with a gift for this, like you do with your humanities think and drink discussions, with resource material, online breakout sessions, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. We're definitely – that's in the works to do that, and it's always helpful to have a facilitator, especially when it's online because it's new territory for many people and have the resources that they're there and – usually we have a scholar there to kind of deepen the discussion, give historical background, to give context to the book. And we've done some on Zoom, just some practice ones. There's breakout room features. And I think it's actually gone really well, and it's just a great opportunity for people to chat with other people. I think that's what people are really missing and I was new to Zoom, and I'm not great at
Me too.
It yet.
I'm sure you'll get better.
Learning. We are learning.
We are learning, but I think that's just the new technology, and it lends itself really well to book discussions. So if people are interested in that, definitely sign up at humanitiesnd.org. We'll be offering more, and tell us what you're looking for, because we can help curate that to meet the needs of people that are out there.
I've only got about 3 minutes left, and I want to ask a sort of a big question here for both of you. During the Great Depression, there were big public works projects to get the employed back to work, and that included public arts and humanities projects. Do you think that's possible today?
Yes, absolutely. North Dakota Council on the Arts has been planning a creative placemaking program, which would put 8 public works of art up around the state, one in each region. And in some ways, the pandemic and people's responses to it, once again the restrictions lift, may really afford us an opportunity to bring people together by selecting special locales in the state, rural areas, where they can come together and create something as a community.
Well, I do remember that, and I wasn't there, but I was told about it and learned about it, that during the Great Depression, a lot of what we look at and see at our national parks was actually built. And I grew up going to a school that had a huge WPA mural in it that told the story of the Red River Valley. So I'm just throwing it out there, Brenna, as red meat.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see that. I mean, this is a great time to capture our history and just have kind of a cultural renaissance. I think that's long overdue, and I love that idea. And I hope there's any legislators out there listening. I hope you also like that idea.
Well, I'd like to close this discussion with another voicemail we received from Chris Orth. He has a business called Fireline Neon, a company in Moorhead. And he says he's been shifting his focus from what's worked in the past for his business to what could work in the future. He says, and I'm quoting here, "I'm actually focusing more on the light at the end of the tunnel, so I just hope everybody keeps their head up and keeps moving forward." And I guess that's the challenge we all face. I want to thank Kim Conoco, Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Again, more information at nd.gov/arts. Kim, thank you for being with us today.
We appreciate your doing this, and I love to partner with Brenna and Humanities in any way that I can.
I know. We've had you on before. And Brenna Gerhart, Executive Director of Humanities North Dakota. More information at humanitiesnd.org. And again, there are Facebook pages, too. Brenna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Doug, and thank you, Kim.
Coming up, a Plains Folk essay that mixes arts and culture from Tom Ezern.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Radisson Hotel of Bismarck, offering 12,000 square feet of event space for your next celebration or business gathering, with amenities to accommodate from 5 to 500. More information on booking your next event online at radisson.com/Bismarck.
Uh-oh, the kids are stuck home? Well, there is some help. Prairie Public reminds you about PBS Kids. It's on the television, but there's also pbskids.org, where you can find all kinds of educational and fun games and activities. pbskids.org or PBS Kids on Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Like most of us, history professor Tom Ezern has been sheltering at home a lot lately and thinking about what's different and what is timeless. Today he offers a Plains Folk essay and a psalm for the season titled Hardwood.
It was a sort of a barbecue, although I think of a barbecue as a social event, something forbidden in the no-contact zone of this year of contagion. Still, it was sort of a barbecue when we opened up a bottle of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc on the patio. We had a fire over which we suspended some skewers. We dined at leisure, setting aside 100 cares as the sinking sun gilded the cornfields and the shelter belts. And then they came in procession. The Canada geese in V's and lines. Then the tundra swans in V's and lines. Then the honkers and swans together in V's and lines. All in joyous voice, traveling in good order, but calling in cacophony. I thought about the house finches returned to our feeders, the killdeer keening across the muddy fields, the redwings investing our willows. I have a lot of friends, many of them fans of the Kansas Jayhawks or the NDSU Bison, who are bereft of seasonal joy this year on account of cancellation of basketball tournaments. I like a good game of hoops, have played a few good ones, and many more mediocre ones, and myself do miss the annual ritual of the State Bee. But I take heart that seasonal joy comes from other calendars, ones no closer to God, but more elemental. So as the evening chilled, and we retreated indoors, I got out a collection of prairie psalms I've been working on, but haven't shown anyone until today. This seems like the time to offer one for my hardwood friends. It is a psalm for the season. March. Circles of silence, islands in a sea of shouting faces, circles immortal, poised for the beginning of time. We watchers cannot cross the lines of paint and years, but we can go home again. I returned and I saw that the race is not to the swift, nor the contest to the strong, but time and chance happeneth to them all. For the God who has gathered us all here safe from the dark and snowy highway, who knows not time but is master of the seasons, who returns the red wing to the slough in March, is God indeed of the hardwood court, is God indeed of the hardwood court. A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to win, and a time to lose. What a little circle our experience is, and the hands of the Most High have bended it. For the God who has gathered us all here safe from the dark and snowy highway, who knows not time but is master of the seasons, who returns the red wing to the slough in March, is God indeed of the hardwood court, is God indeed of a hardwood court.
That's Tom Ezern. Dakota Datebook is next.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
This is Dakota Datebook for April 14th. Every North Dakota community has its Easter traditions. The Christian holiday celebrates the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The date varies from year to year, but occurs around this time in spring. and today we share a sampling of Easter traditions plucked from the historical records. For years, the Plum Creek Homemakers Club of the Richerton area crafted Easter bonnets. So did the Anamoose Ideal Homemakers Club. The Butte Senior Citizens Club held dinners for Easter and hosted a pre-Easter food sale in 1976 to raise money for a bicentennial float. Social clubs in Pekin and Lisbon and other towns would send cards and gifts to residents of elder care facilities. Easter was an ideal date for social events, too. An Easter mask ball was a highlight of the social season for the Osnabrück area. Orchestras came from as far away as Grand Forks. The Alice Concert Band hosted an Easter ball in 1916 for 35 cents per couple. For years, Easter dances were an event in Taylor, with music from the town's concert band. In the Pettibone area, a couple furnished hundreds of eggs for an Easter egg hunt. A local history of Pettibone says no one went home that night without his quota of loot. Churches marked milestones in coordination with Easter Sunday. By 1910, the bell of the new Methodist church in Mott rang in Easter Sunday tidings. The congregation of the Baptist church near Martin dedicated a new church on Easter Sunday in 1965, and on Easter 1970, the church held a burning of the mortgage ceremony. The Bang congregation of the Portland area was organized the day before Easter Sunday in 1881 in a log house. The Church of God in Rose Glen was dedicated at Easter in 1940, the same day of the church's first service. A Braddock area couple married on Easter Sunday in 1919 in Linton. Another hallmark of the season occurred on that day, a terrible snowstorm. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Bill Thomas.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Blood tests that can identify people who've been exposed to the coronavirus are coming on the market quickly.
What if we're already immune and we just don't know it and we don't have to be scared?
But how much can we rely on the results?
The test will be wrong half the time. Half the people will be falsely reassured.
How they still might be useful on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Wednesday on Main Street, the state's prison system has made changes to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. And on our show tomorrow, we'll talk with Leanne Birch, North Dakota's Director of Corrections and Rehabilitation, about steps to protect prisoners and staff from disease. And North Dakota Attorney General Wayne Stengem will join us to talk about scams related to the pandemic. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Wednesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.